is to staying positive and testing negative.
I want to start here specifically with Chicago Party, and I did finish season two. Hilarious. How did you sell this concept? We know about the Twitter feed, but how do you take something like that and bring it to someone who has influence and say, look, this could be something?
You know, I think that it was such a like rich world. And the more I did the Twitter thing, the more I realized that like, oh, it was very easy for me to see like who the other characters could be in this world and how we would kind of fill it out. And somebody said to me at one point, like, you already have your Homer Simpson and now you just have to like build the world around it. And so when we then kind of put this team together of other creatives and other, you know, my friends who are Chicago people and Second City people and very funny writers, and we sat in a writer's room, we really had fun flushing it all out. And like pretty quickly we were like, oh yeah, we totally envision what this could be. And so I think the clarity of it when we pitched it was what really helped sell it, because people just got it right away.
I see. Yeah. Did you always envision this as an animated series, or did you ever think that this would be real people, you know, live action?
Yeah. So the original thought was maybe we do live action, and we were like, we were even talking about how we would cast it. And we were like, oh, Joan Cusack would be a great, you know, party aunt. And then, you know, her in the show, her sister's name is Bonnie. And that's because I'm a friend of Bonnie Hunt's. And we thought she would be a great sister, you know, kind of like the North Shore, like a little more stuck up. And so we were kicking that around for a while. But then, you know, with animation, you can really go crazy and do whatever you want, you know? And we were such fan, you know, everybody in the creative team were such fans of The Simpsons growing up. And it just, eventually, the more we thought about it and talked about it, the more it was like, yeah, animation, we can really get away with more and have more fun. And so that's what we ultimately
is were. Is there a cost to, I mean, I don't know how much you're involved in those discussions, but I mean, is there a higher cost to live action versus doing it in animation?
I think there is. Yeah. I think there probably is, for sure. And we also kind of knew that a lot of these streaming platforms were looking for like adult animated stuff. You know, Netflix had big success with their show Big Mouth. And I think we kind of heard through the grapevine that they were looking for more of that. And so we kind of positioned ourselves to be like, hey, here you go. This is what you're looking for. So
yeah. It seems to me just initially that, you know, while you may have been kind of the creator of this concept, you really do need a team to be able to bring this forward. It's probably a lot harder to just go in it alone. I mean, does that ruin your kind of creative juices a little bit when you've got more people? I'm sure it helps. And I'm sure there are other directions you want to take it that maybe you're getting, you know, the stop sign on.
Definitely both. Like all of a sudden, you know, yeah, because it went from this thing that I was just tweeting out jokes by myself in my boxer shorts to now all of a sudden we're employing like 100 people. And there were a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and it was, you know, all of a sudden it went from being this thing that it was very specifically mine to now there's this whole huge team. So in some ways that was definitely a learning curve and hard for me to get used to. But in other ways it was great, because now like there's this team of people who all want this thing to be great, and they all have their own great, funny ideas. And so, it was definitely a learning curve, but it was cool to now all of a sudden we have like this army of people who want this thing to be great.
Was it hard to sell the idea of a really Chicago-centric show? I mean, it's almost as though, well, I personally feel that, you know, it's almost like a local show, but it's on a streaming service. Is this kind of a direction that maybe some of these streaming services are looking like, you know what, let's hit Atlanta, let's hit Atlanta hard, let's hit Chicago, let's hit, you know, maybe we can have a hyper-focused audience? Or, I mean, are you seeing a big, broad audience?
You know, so there were even times where we were like, should we pitch this like to WGN and it should be like just a Chicago thing? We, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that the specificity is what really makes this character funny, because it's just so Chicago. And there are a lot of inside jokes and a lot of like Easter eggs and stuff.
The Taco Bell one was fantastic in the episode. Where's Taco Bell? Where did Taco Bell go? I mean, no one from Atlanta is going to know what any of that means, right? Yeah.
And when people ask me, well, what do you think about that? I always say, I don't care. Like I love Chicago so much. And I the whole time I was writing it, I was thinking like, I got to get more Chicago specific jokes in here. But it was kind of a balance, a tightrope of, we want it to be very specific, but also broad enough that anybody can enjoy it. And we have heard through Netflix that like the show has got really good numbers in like Eastern Europe and in Africa and in like Jamaica. And so I do think that like it is broad enough for just the average audience to be like, oh, this is a funny woman who's getting into all kinds of trouble. And yeah,
Skilling's loved worldwide, and Scottie Pippen, they were loved worldwide. So you got that connection, right? is there a formula when you're trying to balance that out, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, we need 20 Chicago references, or we need, you know, this in the background, or we need to cram in this many jokes? I think a lot of people, when they're kind of coming up with these concepts, they want to know about that structure, you know, like what is it? What kind of formula do I need? Is that something you look into, or is it just kind of a feel?
You know, we never had a hard and fast formula. It is more of a feel, but this is where having a lot of eyes on it really helps, because I think we all just set out to write the funniest, you know, episodes we could. And then, you know, you turn in a draft and then everybody reads it and they give their thoughts and their notes. And that's when there was a lot of conversations about, I think this is too specific, or it's packed full of too many Chicago jokes and we need to broaden it out more and stuff. So that's where having a lot of eyes on it, I think, really helped. But yeah, never a formula for like, we need to have 20, you know, Chicago jokes or whatever.
Well, I mean, do you do research of other shows? I mean, do you sit down and break down? You mentioned The Simpsons a couple times. Do you break it down and say, okay, how many jokes are they cramming in? Like, how many seconds do I go without laughing? How many references to this or that, or how many characters speak? You know, I mean, do you look into that at all?
Not really. I mean, you know, we definitely talked a lot about, we need, you know, a certain amount of jokes on every page, or, you know, we can't go too long without there being, you know, without a joke. The one thing we looked at a lot for The Simpsons was like, I think that if you look at a lot of successful comedies in our, you know, just in the American lexicon, the thing that really makes a good show is the subtext of family. And I think we looked at The Simpsons a lot, where, you know, they have this core family and they're all looking out for each other and they all love each other. And we really wanted to make sure that this show had that, where, you know, her coworkers and her ex-husband and all these people that populate this world are all kind of a family and in it together. And we wanted to make sure that the show had a lot of pathos and heart. And even though it's packed full of raunchy jokes, it still is, you know, at its core, people looking out for each other, people who love each other. And so that was what we looked at. I think The Simpsons quite a bit was to learn from that, to have that heart, you know, or even like John Hughes movies we talked about a lot, how they're so funny and so Chicago, but it always, you know, leaves you crying at the end of the movie or whatever. So,
well, I mean, do you want to go deeper into these characters? I mean, like, we don't know a lot about Diane's background. We don't know about what she went through, you know, all the trials and tribulations she went through in life. I mean, some of these shows do dig deep and kind of help you broadly understand, but I mean, she is what she is. And I mean, you instantly in the first 10 seconds know what kind of person she is and who she is. So I guess part of what you've done is we're just reading between the lines and we're kind of associating her with someone rather than creating this crazy backstory.
Totally, totally. And I think that's where you also hope for more seasons where you can, that, you know, if we get another season, we'll be able to go, oh, how did Diane and Kurt originally meet in high school, and go back and see that flashback episode or whatever. But no, we do kind of trust the audience to read in between the lines. As I mean, this is clearly a woman who grew up in Chicago, never left the city, and loves to party. You know, I mean, that's very clear.
Is it supposed to be this watery?
Balls! Proportions must be off. Needs more beef fat, my secret ingredient. Balls again, I'm all out!
For a Chicagoan who may be watching your show and have their own idea of a show, maybe they're writing it on the train ride home, maybe when their kids are sleeping, maybe it's something that they've been, an idea that they've had, what would you suggest to kind of move it beyond just a Word document? Like, how do you get it in front of eyeballs? Is it a matter of entering contests? Is it a matter of talking with your friends about it? Like, what process would you go through, you know, from the Midwest as far as making progress on a story?
Meaning if somebody were to want to, like, pitch their own show?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I always say that Chicago is so great, such a great city to get your start, because Chicago, you know, for a performer, I mean, I'm an actor, and in Chicago, I was able to get so much stage time and really hone my craft, cut my teeth, fail a lot, you know, and get better. And I think it's the same for writing in Chicago. There's so many like writing classes that you can take at Second City or, you know, any other place. And what I really learned was you with show business, you really kind of learn by doing it. And so the more you kind of sit down and write, the better you get at it, the more you learn, like, oh, I need to, you know, cut out the fluff and just get to the story. And so Chicago for me was such a great place to get my start, because, you know, when you come to LA, you really kind of want to have your act together, because you only get so many shots, you know? And so I feel like LA isn't the best place to like get your start. And cause if you come out here and pitch some crap, you know, you only get so many bites at the apple.
Is it a disadvantage to be from the Midwest, or is that something that these networks are looking for? Are they looking for different voices, people outside of that LA bubble?
Yeah, I think they are. I think that, you know, when somebody new comes to town, it's always exciting. And what I really see is that the cream rises to the top. And so I think the reason that a lot of, you know, Second City people have been successful is because they went through those years of learning the craft and getting better in Chicago. And so that then when they do come to LA, they're more ready to take it on, you know. And there's a big network of Midwestern people out here that kind of look out for each other and help each other out. The woman who we pitched it to at Netflix, her name is Elizabeth Porter, and she lived in Chicago for many years and was around the improv scene, and we had a lot of mutual friends and stuff. And so she understood it right away. She got the idea right away. And I think she also knew that we were a bunch of funny Chicago people, hardworking. We're not going to be a pain in the ass to work with, you know, it's just going to be fun. And so I think that was a big selling point too.
Yeah. I was wondering if there's like some kind of, you know, Midwest or Chicago fraternity there. You guys all go hang out at the same place and, you know, watch Cubs or Bulls games or whatever. And because I imagine you guys all kind of gravitate toward each other, especially if you come from very similar backgrounds.
Oh, for sure. I play trivia at a bar with a bunch of Chicago people every week. And it kind of is, you know, I do improv shows out here still with all my old Chicago friends. And even if there's, you know, 10 people in the audience, it's still just great to all be together. It feels kind of like bowling night or something. And yeah, we really do stick together.
This is where real Chicagoans hang out. Best bar in the city. And they got a great pizza pub.
You know, I think the one interesting thing about Chicago Party End, as well as you, since you did have the web presence, the social media presence, was it hard once the show launched to A, keep that media presence or that social media presence, and B, like how the show may have changed or altered or redefined what that social media presence was?
Totally. Yes. you know, for a while, I would just tweet stuff. Like I would, you know, do a Google image search and just find some stupid photo and use that in a joke. Well, now all of a sudden I can't, you know, now that it has more eyes on it, I can't just, you know, use Google images. And suddenly it became like, oh, now there's a blue check mark next to the title. And, you know, I'm representing Netflix. And so it did totally change. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, when the show first came out, I didn't realize there's this huge, like, animation community on Twitter who have very strong opinions about animated shows. And so all of a sudden, all these like animation, like teenagers are tweeting their opinions about the show. And, you know, some people are like, I don't like this animation style and saying all these kind of like mean things. And
they're more interested in the art yes, aspect totally. Of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so there's like, there were a lot of people coming out of the woodwork that I wasn't expecting. And all of a sudden I'm, you know, getting this like hate mail and stuff. I'm like, geez, what is going on here?
Diane's a queen of making friends with shady faces in low places. Pays to know people. Amen.
What experience have you gained from the beginning of season one to now? Like, what have you learned about whether it be the show itself, developing characters? I mean, what are some of the things that you've kind of picked up on over the last couple of years?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I literally had zero experience or knowledge about creating an animated show. And it really showed me how much work goes into it and how many people are involved. I mean, like, we employed a small army of people. At one point, you know, you do a bunch of stuff in the writer's room and then you like ship it off to South Korea where there's these like animation houses, and then they do all the animation, and then, you know, they would send it back, and some things they would get exactly right and other things they would be way off on. And so then it was like giving notes and da da da. And so it really impressed upon me, like, just, you know, when you see movie credits at the end of a movie and you see all those names, it's like, I think it's easy to just not even think about it, but like, to make a TV show, so much goes into it, whether it's the music or the animation or the voiceover so I really learned that, like, oh wow, it really is a huge operation to get something made. And it's really hard to get something made. Like, to get something from an idea to an actual TV show, it's like 3 years of like insane hard work to do that. So that was, I think that's what I learned mostly overall, is just this, it really is a small miracle when something gets made.
Were there a lot of no's in the process? Did you run into a lot of roadblocks?
Some. I mean, Netflix was actually really cool. You hear nightmare stories about getting notes from networks, and, you know, you get these notes back and they're like, oh, this is way off. And this is, you know, Netflix was actually really cool. They gave us kind of minimal notes. And whenever they did give us notes, it was actually very helpful. And so I would actually say that we didn't hear a lot of no's. It was pretty like, they were pretty creator friendly, I would say.
You know, we're watching season two right now and we're enjoying it. You're probably operating 6 months ahead of us, right? I mean, you're probably already thinking about the next thing. You don't, you know what's coming ahead. You know what you've got to do. I mean, first of all, at this point, do we know, is there a season three? Is there any other projects that you're working on that we're not privy to?
So we don't know if there's a season three yet. So we're just kind of like, you know, waiting to hear. That's part of the fun of this business, is like, you'll work really hard on something and it comes out, and then you have to sit there and wait to see if you're.
Is it because they're waiting to see what our reaction is and how many of us are watching it? Is it?
Yeah,
I mean,
yes,
are they just basically waiting. So you create a season, you put it out there, and then you just sit back and wait and see if people like it, and then you find out if you get another season.
Exactly. Netflix behind the scenes has their, you know, algorithm or whatever that they can track, you know, every single number down to the viewer. And, you know, the not a lot of people realize this, but the first season of Chicago Party Ant came out on the same day as the show Squid Game, which was Netflix's biggest show, you know, of all time or whatever. And so when our show came out, we were competing with Squid Game. And, you know, I think that our show is for you, when you look at Netflix shows, I think we're somewhere in the middle of like, we weren't this like breakout hit, you know, but it did get a lot of views. And so that is what it comes down to, is like, are you pulling in the numbers that they want? And that's basically, you know, what determines.
Are you, do you find yourself competing with Squid Game, or do you, find yourself competing with, since you guys are all part of the Netflix platform, do you find yourself competing with Hulu and, you know, HBO Max? I mean, if people are, clicking into Netflix, they're going to see you, up there when they're looking at Squid Game, right? I mean,
yeah, that's yes. You know, I think that the Squid Game of it all is that Netflix decides which shows they're going to promote more, you know? And so when Chicago Party Ant came out, there were, there was a billboard in Times Square, there was a billboard in Chicago, and there was one in LA. But I, you know, I don't think we got the same amount of press backing and promotion as like a show like Squid Game. But I mean, we're probably competing against other adult animation. And so, you know, I don't, the other thing is that they really kind of keep you in the dark. And so we never really knew exactly what the numbers were or what, who we were competing against, or so we're really kind of in the dark for a lot of, it.
You don't have to fight for front page clicks on, Netflix, do you? I mean, you don't get any say as far as placement goes when people scroll, when people search. That's probably all algorithms, I would think, right?
All algorithms, all in-house. We have no, absolutely no say on any of that. Yeah.
So when do you start? Do you actually see any of the numbers when they come in of how many people? Netflix has all that information, and then they just tell you later, hey, you did good, or maybe not so much.
Or you're it's popular in, Eastern Europe. Yeah. And Schaumburg. Those are the two areas. Yeah.
Hey, you know, I mean, two big powerhouses in the world, right? Yes. All right. So are there any, what are some of the complaints you hear from people? You know, I've got one, and that's that we don't really have letter grades on our restaurants here in Chicago.
Yes.
I always see that A in the background, and I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
So that, you know, is like, I can promise you that me or the creators had no say in that. And that was just something that an animator put in there that we didn't catch. Sure. And all of a sudden it's on TV and we're like, oh yeah, it, you know, there aren't letter grades in Chicago. And then all of a sudden people are tweeting at me, hey, you moron. It's like, okay, I'm sorry. It just,
And it's because all of the restaurants in Chicago are A's. So that's why that happened.
The other big one that you see, I'm wearing a Cubs hat here. I'm a Cubs fan. And, you know, the big one that we hear is that Diane Dombrowski would probably most likely be more of a White Sox fan. She was, you know, we think that she was probably born and raised in like Beverly or Bridgeport or something like that. And so she would probably more likely be a White Sox fan. I don't disagree with that, but I'm a Cubs fan. And also, like, Wrigleyville is, you know, the ultimate party neighborhood. And yes, it's cheesy and can be kind of lame, and I get all that. But like, you know, we thought it would just be a much better playground to put her in so she can get into all of her trouble. And so, and I'm a Cubs fan, and we created the show. My friends are Cubs fans. So that's probably the main thing that we hear a lot, is she should be a Sox fan.
When life gives you lemons, you turn that into Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Are you coming up with ideas and concepts already for season 3? I mean, are you writing this stuff down? Do you kind of randomly, when you're in the shower, think of jokes and be like, oh, we got to do this?
Yes, yes. I have, you know, a notes app on my phone where I'm always writing down ideas. I'm working on other projects right now. So that's kind of what's taking up my creative headspace. But I'm always jotting down, or I'll think of a, you know, I'll be in the shower and think of a joke and then I'll tweet it out. So yes, it is definitely an ongoing thing.
So really there is no rest. Season's out, you push it out. I know you're waiting for Netflix, but you've got other coals in the fire that you're working on right now. And so it might not be the worst thing that you take a pause from Chicago Party Ants until kind of the dust settles and figure out where you're at.
Totally. I mean, Chicago Party Ant has now been a part of my life for the last, you know, I don't know when I started the Twitter, but probably 6 years. And I mean, if I'm being totally honest, I'm kind of burnt out on it. You know,
like, I can imagine. Because you got to keep it active, right? You got to keep people participating.
Yes, exactly. And you can only you can only come up with so many Italian beef jokes, you know. The other funny thing that happened to me is, so I'm on this show, The Bear, on Hulu, which is another big Chicago show. Mm-hmm. And I play kind of the lovable, dopey brother-in-law, Pete. And but that show is also just packed full of Chicago stuff and Italian beef. And so I feel like I live in L.A., but my life is still very Chicago-centric.
Well, you've got a niche, and apparently it works, right? I mean, I don't know if it's because us here in Chicago, we just consume it all so much, or, you know, probably because you're generating such great, great stuff. That's probably a big part of it as well. So,
well, my ultimate goal is to get a place back in Chicago and kind of split my time, because I mean, listen, LA is cool. It's always sunny. There's always interesting stuff going on, but my heart will forever be in the city of Chicago. And I really do hope that I can kind of, you know, live there again someday. And that's my goal. So, yeah.
Do you think, I talk with a lot of Olympians who, you know, grow up in this area or wherever, and then when, you know, they become beach volleyball players, they have to go out to LA, or when they become, you know, skiers, they have to go out to Utah. And they always talk about how they wish they could come back. They wish they could set up something here. I mean, do you envision a time when maybe Chicago is kind of a hub for entertainment content? Maybe people don't have to move to LA, don't have to move to New York, but can actually plant themselves here and create here?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to talk to the mayor about that and figure out some tax stuff. You know, we shot The Bear in Chicago, and there's that great studio there. Is it CineSpace or whatever, where they do a lot of stuff?
West Side, yeah.
Yeah, all those Chicago shows. And I do think that it does come down to the weather. And, you know, you can shoot stuff in L.A. all year round and not have to worry about some, you know, a snowstorm and – So I think that is probably a big factor, but man, I would love it. I mean, if I could like move back to Chicago and if there was enough work in town to just be able to stay there, I would love it. So I think we should talk to the mayor.
I mean, COVID wise, I mean, everyone was working from home anyways. Is there still a need for a physical space for everyone to congregate? Do you find that it's better? I mean, you've probably done it both ways, where you've done Zooms and you've also been in rooms with people. I don't know if there's a difference as far as chemistry or how scripts get written or jokes. I mean, is it?
I think there is a bit of a difference with the chemistry. If you're all in the same room, I think it does kind of flow a little better.
Feed off each other.
But like all of my, when I audition for things now, it's all self-tape. You know, I tape it in my living room. So yeah, it has, COVID has changed the game as far as, you know, do you need to live here in Hollywood to work in Hollywood? I think the answer is no, but I don't know. Then, you know, there, if you are in a writer's room and you have to, you know, and it's in person, you know, you don't want to be living in Chicago then. So yeah, it's interesting.
What are some of the biggest mistakes people can make if they want to write scripts, write jokes, something like that? What should they steer away from?
Wow. I would say the biggest thing is keep it simple. Like, I think sometimes when people are just starting out, they want to write this big, complicated thing. And I've read scripts where I just don't even know what the hell's going on. And I would say what I learned the most on this project was like, keep it simple. Like, you want the audience to be able to get it right away and then just go on the ride and have fun, rather than trying to figure out some, you know, I mean, you can write your epic script down the line, but I would say starting out, keep it simple.
like an actual, I guess, do you submit, a script to someone, but then it always gets changed? Is that like, yes. if someone's written a script for a show or a concept or something like that, I mean, you submit a full show script, right? And then people say yes or no. And
yes.
then it kind of
yes.
moves on from there.
Yeah. So I'm writing a script, like I'm developing an idea right now with my writing partner. And so we are writing the pilot script, which would be the first episode, and then sending it to a producer, and they give their notes. And I can already see that because I worked on Chicago Party Ant for 2 seasons, I really learned to like trim the fat and like to put in what really needs to be there and then get rid of all the fluff, you know? So
you may have a full season already in your mind as to how a whole season would look, but you're just giving them a small taste of the pilot and hoping they come back.
Exactly. And then you put together also kind of a pitch where you would kind of say, here's how we imagine the season would go. But yeah, but only giving them the, you know, the, what they really need as opposed to flushing the whole thing out. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Well, cool. I've always wondered about some of this stuff. And so thanks for clearing it up. I think a lot of people here in the Midwest who maybe, you know, have some ideas that they'll get some advice here and kind of figure out which direction they want to go.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of great writing classes in Chicago. The Second City. I also performed a lot at a place called the Annoyance Theater. Also IO, formerly Improv Olympic. They all offer great writing classes and improv classes. And I would definitely say for anybody who's interested living in Chicago and interested in this stuff, those are all great places to start.
And I assume then you can network with people and maybe even come up with your own posse of writers so you can take on the world together. Huh?
There you go. Find some like-minded, funny people and hang out.
That's Chicagoans, right?
Yes.
Very good.